So welcome everyone for our JCC Lunch and Learn program, Tu B'Av, the 15th day of the Jewish month of Av, a paradigm shift. So the HMS Israel, the beautiful ship of the Jewish people, has had a very difficult 3 weeks. We call the period of time of destruction, the Churban, the Bein HaMitzarim, literally between the narrow straits. It's been a very difficult time where we commemorate not only the loss of our temples, but many, many other tragic events that have befallen the Jewish people. So now it's time to get up from the metaphorical mourning process, what we call Shiva, and to look ahead. But that is, of course, easier said than done. There are extra source sheets right at the back on the chair behind Mr. Rappaport. He can show you where they are. They're right on the chair back there. In Jewish law, we know that the rabbis have very carefully crafted a mechanical way to follow through a process of a death in the family. And we begin with a state called acute mourning, aninut, which is from the moment a person passes until interment, until the burial process. And then from the moment that we inter our beloved, we have 7 days, Shiva. And that is a very intense period where we are really, ostensibly, never left to our own devices. We are confined to the home. Everyone comes to us. Food is brought to us. Hugs and love is bestowed upon us. And then at the end of the Shiva, we have 23 more days of what they call the Shloshim, the 30-day mourning period, including the 7 days of Shiva. And for everyone other than a parent, that is the entirety of the mourning process in Jewish law. For a parent, uniquely, because of our relationship with them, we have a total of 12 months where we have a mourning process. So at the end of the 30 days, or at the end of the 12 months, we are told to rise, to get up from our mourning period. We literally refer to it as getting up from Shiva. You rise up, metaphorically speaking, if not literally, because we've been sitting on low stools. So the question is, if during this collective mourning process where every Jewish man, woman, and child, everyone who is sensitive to the historical loss of our temples and to the reality of the diaspora, the galut that we are now in, almost 2,000 years and counting, to every sensitive individual, it's nice to talk about, well, we have 3 weeks of mourning, and then we have the Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of Av, where we fast and we have ashes, and it's a horrifically down day, very, very nightmarishly, shall we say, difficult for each and every one of us, and not just because of the absence of food and drink. It's a very tough day to get through. But then we get through it, and we're told, okay, get up from mourning. Well, okay, but how do we get up? How do we transition, if you will, what I'm calling a paradigm shift? How do we make that transition between a state of bereavement, ashes, a funereal state, and how do we transition from that to somehow a little holiday called the 15th day of Av, Tu B'Av? And as we're going to see, it was a day of joy, a day of rejoicing. Well, how do we make that transition? And God willing, at the end of the class today, we will see on a universal level how we make that transition, meaning as the Jewish people, how do we transition from sadness, avelut, to a state of simcha, to a state of joy. And on a personal level, if we've suffered any losses, and I'm sure every one of us in this room has to some extent, how on a personal, local level does that relate? Now, keep in mind, please, that when we officially wish a Jewish person comfort, we use a very strange phrase. We say, HaMakom Yenachem Etchem, may God the Omnipresent comfort you. Together, betoch sha'avei litzion v'Yerushalayim, together with the mourners of Zion and Jerusalem. So in the command and the mitzvah itself to be menachem avel, to comfort a mourner, we are connecting the local loss. We're speaking to the individual who's just lost someone near and dear to them. And we're saying, may you be comforted together with the mourners of Tisha B'Av, essentially, of the ninth of Av, who are mourning for the loss of Zion and Jerusalem. That's Tisha B'Av. So you see that on a very fundamental level, every loss that we experience on an individual local level, we connect it immediately to the loss of Jerusalem, to the loss of the temple, and to the state of diaspora. So that's very clear. So if that's true, then we need to try to understand at the end of today, and that's my hope, that we will understand more about this little holiday called the 15th day of Av, Tu B'Av, and from that, maybe gain insight into the human condition of mourning itself and how we get up from mourning, metaphorically speaking. So there's a holiday called Tu B'Av. Pointed out last night at services, it's a very strange little holiday that if you ask someone, okay, Tu B'Av, they may at first get it confused with the holiday for trees that we call Tu B'Shvat because there's that Tu sound. But it literally means the 15th day of Av. And it was, as we're going to see, strangely, a day of great joy that the rabbis equate with the holiest, most solemn day of the year, Yom HaKippurim, the Day of Atonement. And that's strange to say the least, because you could write a whole Megillah, an entire 3,000-page oratory on the greatness of the Day of Atonement. Everyone knows about the Day of Atonement. But Tu B'Av? And that somehow they are equated, as we're going to see in a famous oral piece of tradition called the Mishnah, in source number one. Let me read it to you. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Omer. The great sage Rabbi Shimon, the son of Gamliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court of law, said the following, and this is from Masechet Tractate Ta'anit, which is part of the oral tradition, the 63 tractates that are the framework for what we call Mishnah, the oral tradition. So Rabban Shimon Gamliel said the following, Israel, the Jewish people, had no greater days of joy than Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av, which is this Thursday evening, tomorrow night, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Again, Day of Atonement, I understand, but Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av? On these days, and this is a very strange, strange custom, on these days, both of these days, the 15th of Av and on Yom HaKippurim, Day of Atonement, the daughters of Israel, the unmarried young women who are of marriageable age, would go out dressed in white. They would wear white finery. And each dress had to be borrowed in order not to shame any of the other young ladies who didn't have a suitable white dress. And what would they do? The daughters of Jerusalem would go out and dance in the Kramim, in the vineyards, adjacent to the walled city of Jerusalem. If you want to stop for a second, take a look at the little clip art. It's easier to see in my, because mine is color. I'm sorry, I didn't print everyone off in color. But you can see the old city, the walled city of Jerusalem in the distance, and the young ladies are all dressed up in their white finery, and they are dancing, okay? So the young, unmarried daughters of Jerusalem would go out, they would dance in the vineyards, and they had an audience. All the young, eligible bachelors would be there watching the girls dance. Now, I dare say that this does not go on today in Lakewood or in Bnei Brak or in Orthodox Jewish circles or even non-Orthodox Jewish circles. Okay, this is probably the source for what Mr. Goldberg referred to earlier as the Jewish Valentine's Day. This is probably the source from this Mishnah, the idea of the boys and girls getting together and, in this case, hopefully renting a shidduch, you know, finding a mate. And the daughters of Jerusalem will go out and dance in the vineyards, and what would they say to the young men, their audience? They would say, Bachur, young man, lift up your eyes and see what you choose for yourself. Don't set your eyes upon beauty. Rather, set your eyes upon family. How do we know this? For in Proverbs, we read every Friday night to our women of our lives, the Eshet Chayil, from the book of Proverbs, Solomon wrote, for grace is false and beauty is vain. Sheker hachein vehevel hayofi, isha yirat Hashem, a woman who fears God, she will be praised. Beautiful. By the way, just as a little footnote, it's a little more humorous in the Talmud, where the Talmud discusses who would say what. So apparently there were different groups of the young ladies. So the women who had the beauty part would say, young man, you don't have to look any further than beauty, because that's what it's all about. You know, after all, we're going to have beautiful children together. And then the women who maybe weren't as beautiful but had yichus, had the genealogy, had the family, they'd say, hey, look, we're going to have great children with tremendous honor, and it goes back to these wonderful people historically, so you marry somebody for the children you're going to have. And the women who are, shall we say, neither possessors of beauty nor yichus genealogy, they actually are called homely in the Talmud. The homely ladies would say, you know what? Give me lots of jewelry. Get me farpitzed. I'll dress up beautifully in beautiful dresses, and I'll look beautiful to you anyways, and give me lots of jewelry, and we'll have a great life together. Okay? It's very cute. So let's stop for a second. So on multiple levels, this Mishnah, I'm sorry, Carol?
My mother never taught me that.
This Mishnah seems strange on multiple levels. Number one, this strange little holiday called the 15th of Av, Tu B'Av. Okay, great. You're telling me somehow that it is as equal in terms of joy of Simcha to the Day of Atonement? It's very strange. And then, of course, this minhag, this custom of the Jewish girls going out to the vineyards is a strange custom. Now on Tu B'Av, I guess it's okay because it's not going to fall on a Shabbat. But can you imagine, you know, go to synagogue, you go to your temple, and it's a Day of Atonement, everyone's in there, I sin, please God, you know, forgive me, and then you say to the rabbi, oh, by the way, the girls, I got to go watch the girls dance now, bye. I won't be there for your speech, rabbi, I'm going out to watch the girls dance. Somehow I don't know that today's rabbis would perhaps excuse you from the service. You may get a few metaphorical rocks thrown your way if you try to use that one. So we need to understand, how is Tu B'Av such a great day of joy? What happened? And this question is courtesy of the Talmud. So look at source number two. Rabban Shimon Gamliel, who was our spokesman in our Mishnah source one, said, and we're quoting from the Mishnah, from the earlier section, there never were greater days of joy in Israel among the Jewish people than the 15th day of Av and the Day of Atonement. So the Talmud asks the question I just asked. Now, I can understand the Day of Atonement, why it is a great day of joy. Because it is a day of forgiveness and pardon. And on it, the second tablets of the law, the Luchot Shniim, were given. But what happened on the 15th of Av that it should merit inclusion seemingly equal to that of the Day of Atonement? So let's just stop for a second. The Day of Atonement, we're not saying, is a day of levity. So when we say joy, we don't mean in kalut rosh, like just lightheadedness. And it's the opposite. It's a very intense day. But it's also a treasure because it's a gift. It's an opportunity once a year to reset that relationship with our Creator and with our fellow men and women. So it's a tremendous day. At the end of Yom Kippur, you have two phenomenally joyful responses. One, I get to eat my bagels and cream cheese now because I can break my fast, okay? So that's one joyful feeling. My second joyful feeling at the conclusion of the fast is, God willing, oh my gosh, what a weight off my shoulders. Ah, I feel like a new individual. So it's a very joyous time, even though it is an intense 25-hour period of our lives. So the Talmud then goes on to list various events, historical, real events that happened to our people on this 15th day of Av, Tu B'Av. And at the end, I'm going to try to link them up and show you a commonality that they share. So let's begin. Under number two, we have A, the first historical event that happened on this day. So again, the Talmud's asking, Yom Kippur, I get, but Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av, what's the significance? Now we're going to show you the significance. Rabbi Judah said in the name of Samuel of Shmuel, it is the day, the 15th day of Av, on which permission was granted to the tribes of Israel to intermarry. Now what does that mean? We're talking about intertribal marriage. In the generation that left Egypt, they were very, very careful to only allow tribes to marry within tribes. So when they're settling the promised land of Israel with Joshua, a young man from Benjamin married a young girl from Benjamin. A young man from Judah married a young girl from Judah. They would not have a young man from Judah marrying a young girl from Joseph, Menasha, or Ephraim's tribe, and vice versa. Now, you might say, well, what's the problem? We're all Jewish. That's not the issue. The issue, of course, is property, because you have a land of Israel, and each parcel of Israel was divided up according to tribal lines. So if you start having this tribe gets part of this territory, can you imagine down the road, before there's this distinction of which area is settled by which area, they were very careful at the beginning, for the first generation, to only allow men and women from each tribe to marry from within each tribe. But then, on the Tu B'Av, on the 15th day of Av, they said, okay, we've settled Israel, the land is conquered, the land is ours, we've delineated the territories, we no longer have to be worried. And all the Jewish men and women who are of marriageable age went, oh my gosh, Baruch Hashem, now the pool of my eligible potential mates has just grown exponentially, so I can marry from any of the other tribes. So it was a great day of joy, which of course connects with the idea of the girls dancing, right? I mean, you can see the connection and maybe the idea of why we associate this period of time with making shiduchim, marriages. So that's one example. Maybe not the most important, but we'll get more important examples to follow. B, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Joseph said in the name of Rabbi Nachman, it is the day, the 15th day of Av, on which the tribe of Benjamin was permitted to re-enter the congregation of Israel and marry within the congregation of Israel. Now, this is not as well known. It's a tragic story. I won't give you the entirety of the story. You're going to have to look it up for yourselves in the book of Judges. But it is there at the end of the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges. It's a horrific story. We refer to the story, it's called Pilegesh B'Giva, a concubine in Giva. It's very eerily reminiscent of the story of Sodom, of Sodom, Lot, and his family. If you recall, the angels come, they're threatened with rape by the men of Sodom. Lot protects them, they're struck with blindness, they leave Lot, his wife, who turns into the pillar of salt, and his two unmarried daughters, they leave. Sodom and Gomorrah are laid to waste. We know the story. Very similar story. There was a man who had a concubine in Pilegesh. She was horrifically raped by the men in Benjamin, left literally for dead. He took her, and I won't go into the graphic detail here, but he essentially took her dead body because she was literally raped to death. I mean, it's a horrific crime done by Benjaminites. And as a response, the tribes of Israel went to war against Benjamin and almost eliminated the entirety of the tribe of Benjamin. And that's why it was very significant that the first king of Israel, King Saul, was a Benjaminite. His response to Samuel before he became king was, what, me? My tribe just got over this huge war that we fought. We almost lost our entire tribe. How do you think the other tribes are going to feel when someone from Benjamin is appointed as the king of Israel? So that became a big issue in the book of Samuel a little later. So the story of Pilegesh B'Giva, they basically put the tribe of Benjamin off limits because of this horrific war. But on Tu B'Av, on the 15th day of Av, a little later on, after the war was over and the war was won by the tribes of Israel against Benjamin, they released any constraints and the men and women of Benjamin were allowed to freely marry from the other tribes. And they restored Benjamin as a population center. Of course, Benjamin became a significant part of Israel because the Mizbeach, the holy altar, was actually located in a segment belonging to the tribe of Benjamin, adjacent to Judah. So it's a very significant thing. Okay, that was Tu B'Av. Again, related to marriage. So in case 1A, we had intertribal marriages were allowed on the 15th day of Av. 2, the tribe of Benjamin, all constraints that essentially excommunicated them from the rest of Israel were lifted on the 15th day of Av. So far it seems like there's a common denominator. But let's look at number C, 3. Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabba the son of someone named Bar Chana. It's a very strange name. Rabba Bar Bar Chana. So his name literally means Rabba the son of Chana. So I can only imagine when he got called to the Torah, it was a little confusing. You know, the Gabbai would say, what's your name? Rabba Bar Bar Chana. He'd be, what? And the poor Gabbai, you know, the guy calling you the Torah, we would be flummoxed every time. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana said, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, it is the day, the 15th day of Av, on which the generation of the wilderness ceased to die out. Oh my gosh, now we're getting down to the 9th day of Av. Well, let's step back for a moment. What's the connection? We know that the spies, the Meraglim, the 10 spies who spoke malevolently about Israel, caused as a result of their Lashon Hara, their evil speech, we gave a class about this, they caused the death of all the men from that generation. They all died. 40 years in the desert, they waited and they wandered around in circles, and a 3-day journey to Israel became a 40-year, 1 year per day of the tour of the spies of Israel. Each day that they toured Israel to plan its destruction, they were given a year as a result. So for 40 years, that generation lived and then they died. And only the next generation was permitted to go to Israel. Well, guess what day that 40-year process came to an end? This Thursday night, Friday, Tu B'Av. Now, how did it work? How did it work that it fell out on Tu B'Av? Okay, so this is very, very interesting. The 9th day of Av is, of course, 6 days from Tu B'Av. So the 9th day of Av fell out this last Saturday, Shabbat, even though we didn't fast because of the honor of Sabbath. And Thursday night, Friday, is Tu B'Av. So you see the proximity of these 2 days. So what's the relationship then? So on the 9th day of Av, the evil report of the spies comes. God says, this is the day that you're going to die. So every 9th day of Av, Tu B'Av, all the men of the generation of the spies dug their own graves. And they lay down on the night of Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. They lay down in their own grave. The next morning, there was an announcement. Anyone who's alive, please get up. And anyone who did not die that first year of the wilderness stood up from their graves. The rest who were still in their graves were simply covered over. Every single year for 39 years, this was the process. In other words, they didn't all die in one fell swoop. Death was decreed on everyone, but they didn't die in 1 year. So every year, on the 9th day of Av, they would dig their own graves. And it's a very graphically visual thing. We'd see it in our mind's eye. It's horrific. They would dig their own graves, and then in the morning, get up. And whoever did not get up stayed in the ground and were buried. All right. The last year. The erroneous belief was that it was going to be 40 years. God, in his mercy, commuted the sentence, pardoned them. Kind of the way our wonderful human being, Jonathan Pollard, Baruch Hashem, thank God, was just pardoned and will get out of jail, out of prison after 30 long years. It's a very big, big thing. If you follow the news, you probably saw that report yesterday. So after 40 years, the last Tisha B'Av, the last 9th day of Av, the last living segment of that population that were supposed to die in the 9th of Av, they dug their graves like they did every 9th of Av. And they lay down that night in the graves. And talk about a 9th day of Av. I mean, we complain because of not eating and drinking. Sleeping in your own grave, potentially, for 39 years. I mean, unbelievable. And the next day, the announcement was, get up, whoever is alive. Miraculously, everyone got up. And they all looked at each other. Nobody died. But wait a minute. It's supposed to be 40 years. Each year corresponding to the 40 days that the spies spent in the Holy Land. They all thought, oh my gosh, I'm alive, but must be we miscalculated the 9th of Av. They didn't have calendars back then. They would rely on the moon. When the new moon, so they would count from the new moon of Av, 9 days, that must be the 9th day of Av, Tisha B'Av, that's when they dug their graves. So their response the next morning, instead of being relieved, which I guess they were a little bit relieved to still be in the land of the living, their response was, uh-oh, we messed up on our calculations. And so the next night, the night of the 10th of Av, They thought it could still be the ninth, so they lay down in their graves again. Next morning, anyone who's alive, get up. Everyone got up and went on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th. And they did it on the night of the 15th. But when they got up on Tu B'Av, the 15th day, they looked up. They said, there's no mistake, because for the 15th, the moon is visible. It's clearly not the ninth of Av. And they all rejoiced. They said, oh, must be the God has commuted our sentence. We are going to live. And it was a tremendous, you can only imagine the celebration. Here they thought it was an impending death sentence. And then from the ninth of Av, and then you reach the clarity of the moon on the 15th of Av, they knew, oh my gosh, God has had mercy on our generation. We're going to live to get to Israel. So it became a tremendously joyful day. So now we understand. I got a little goosebumps there as you're telling the story. Now we understand the profundity of the original 15th day of Av, what it meant to that generation to live, literally, not metaphorically. Okay, let's go to the next one. D. Rabbi Ulla said, it is the day on which King Hosea, the son of Elah, removed the guards which King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, had placed on the roads to prevent Israel from going up to Jerusalem on pilgrimage. And King Hosea proclaimed, let them go up to whichever shrine they desire. What's the story here? You're maybe familiar with the famous Lost Tribes of Israel. There was an internal war, if you will, more political than anything else, between the families of Judah and Joseph about who was the real king or kings of Israel. And Hosea and his earlier king, King Jeroboam, they separated and they created a northern kingdom that they called the Kingdom of Israel. The legitimate king, the kings of the family of Judah, were in the southern kingdom of Yehuda, where its capital city, of course, was Jerusalem. That means the temple, everything that we associate with Israel, that was in the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, we know the lost tribes were lost, essentially, the northern kingdom, because they were conquered by the Assyrian king Sanherib. He took them away and mixed them up within his tremendous empire, and we don't know to this day, where are those lost tribes? Is it somewhere in India and Ethiopia? Are they the American Indians? Everyone has tons of theories. I even heard someone say, well, it's the British, right? Because the British are the Brit-ish, the men of the covenant, okay? But there's a lot of theories. What happened to those lost tribes? Nobody really knows, but they are lost to us. So what happened? The northern kingdom of Israel were far from righteous, as you're going to see in a moment. And King Jeroboam, the son of Nevat, was a huge idolater. He forbid the worship of God, and he put idols everywhere in the northern kingdom of Israel, and he put guards to prevent any of his disciples from the northern kingdom of venturing south to Jerusalem for any of the three pilgrimage holidays of Sukkot, the festival of tabernacles, Passover, Pesach, the festival of unleavened bread, or Shavuot, the festival of Feast of the Weeks, where we celebrate the Torah. Anyone who tried to go, they had border guards stopping you from going to Jerusalem. But Hosea, on the 15th day of Av, Tu B'Av, said to the guards, I'm the new king, remove, get lost, get a new job, go patrol other borders, you're not needed. If anyone wants to come from the northern kingdom of Israel and go pray to Hashem, to God in Jerusalem, they have my permission. Now, he wasn't a nice guy. He didn't say, go to pray to God. He just said, well, I'm going to give them the option to pray to God or to pray to my idols, but I'm not going to make it mandatory. So a tzaddik he wasn't, right? A righteous person he wasn't. But at least he removed the border protection and said, you guys can go pray to God if you want, although I think it's a lost cause. But at least he allowed people to make pilgrimage. And when did that happen? On the 15th day of Av. And the last one we brought down, number E. Rabbi Masna said, it is the day when permission was granted for those killed at Betar to be buried. The story of Betar is a horrific story. It happened in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba rebellion against the Romans, Roman occupation. Bar Kokhba was thought by the great sage Rabbi Akiva to perhaps be the Messiah, the Mashiach. Didn't work out that way. And in retribution for the chutzpah, the audacity of the Jewish people to not be subservient to Roman oppression, the Romans came down and they laid to waste the people of Betar, and as an ultimate shtoch, as an indignity to the Jewish people, they wouldn't even permit the burial of the Jewish dead. Thousands remained unburied. Now this is Israel. This is a hot, humid climate. And normally, of course, what would happen? Putrefaction of the bodies. And that's what the evil Romans wanted, the ultimate indignity, because they know how precious it is for every Jewish mother and father to have their children buried in a timely way. So for years, they were left unburied, but they didn't decompose. Miraculously, each and every body stayed in its immediate state of death as an open miracle. So the Romans, after a number of years, say, wait a minute, you know, we're going to have to rethink this. We thought that this would be a shtoch, right? It would be a shot to the bow of the Jewish people. They wouldn't be allowed to bury their dead. Instead, it's become a PR nightmare for us, because every year everyone sees clearly that God is miraculously preserving these bodies untouched. So let's just let them get buried. So on the 50th day of Av, Caesar said, bury your dead of Betar. So they were buried. So this now gives us five, there's just others also, but five of the important historical events that happen on Tu B'Av. Are they connected? Does it help us solve our question at the beginning, which was, Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, I understand. Great day. 15th day of Av, what's the connection? So I believe the connection is the following. In each one of these stories, A through E, you see a commonality. The people in this story could not live life again because they were connected to death and to the past. Think about it. Let's take them individually very quickly. Number one, nobody could get married, so people felt constrained for the future, because if I can't marry the young lady or the young boy that I really am in love with because they happen to come from a different tribe, there is no Jewish future. B, the Benjaminites were almost extinguished as a people. There is no future for a Benjaminite. Ah, but on Tu B'Av, constraints were lifted, so you have a future. C, the generation of the wilderness. Every year, they're digging their own graves. So you say to them, do you have a future? Of course I don't have a future. I'm going to die. I don't know if it's this ninth of Av, or the next ninth of Av, or the 40th ninth of Av, but I know that I have no future. So a person who has no future is always in a perpetual state of mourning. How could it be otherwise? Next, D, you're not allowed to go to Jerusalem to offer prayers to God. So you're in a situation where there is no hope. There's no way to relieve your sins that you've done because I'm not giving you access to the temple. You can't recreate yourself by praying to God and asking for forgiveness. So you're always in a state of tuma, of impurity. You can't perfect yourself because ritual sacrifice and the proximity to God in Jerusalem was the way that we used to bring ourselves out and reformulate ourselves. But we couldn't do that because there were border guards. And lastly, if the dead aren't buried, how can you have a future? If the dead are still in the battlefield, and you say to somebody, okay, but just walk over the dead and let's build for our future. What? If I can't bury the dead, why are you talking as if I have hope for a future? So there is that common link. In each and every case, what was holding back a belief in a future? The past. So that paradigm shift that we spoke about is the ability to flip that switch and say, I loved, and I lost, and I buried, and I mourned, but now I'm ready to look at life again. There is a possibility for a future. It can't be the same because my loved one is no longer with me. It will be different, yes, but there will be a future. And in each and every one of these cases, that's what Tu B'Av celebrates. I can reformulate who I am and what I am, and I'm not quite sure what that future holds for me without my loved one, but I can live again. The ability to get up after the mourning process, which is exactly what the young lady said to the young men in the fields. Young man, Jew, you lost 6 million. I know it's beyond pain to imagine that the Jewish people could ever have a future after a Holocaust. But you're going to get up now, and you're going to go to Israel, and you're going to rebuild from the ashes of Auschwitz. And remarkably, we all know stories, real stories, people you may have met and heard about, people who lost their wives and 11 or 12 children who were all burned and gassed. And what did they do? They somehow, unimaginably, got up and they married again and they had another family and they lived life. And those children and those grandchildren are with us today in our community here in Wilkes-Barre and all over the world. We as a Jewish people have that ability. And this is exactly why Tu B'Av is this amazing gift which is equated with Yom Kippurim, because what is Yom Kippur about? I can't live life because I have all the garbage, the baggage on my soul from my sins of the past. God says, okay, Yom Kippur, let's erase it all. You have life again, it's yours, live it. So you see very clearly that Yom Kippur is a gift from God to go on and to live life. And that's why we have that joy after Yom Kippur is completed. Not only a break in the fast, but breaking the bonds of the past and reconstituting who we are and going forward, having a vision for a future again. No matter how much bad stuff I have on my soul's now pure again. I'm ready to live. And that's what happened in each and every one of these cases. And that's how remarkably our people over the millennia have had the unique ability to rise from the ashes, to rise from those graves on the ninth day of Av, shake off the ashes and dust and dirt, and look again and say, see what life could be. God willing, each of us and the Jewish people will have that ability uniquely to look at life again, to reformulate ourselves, to reconfigure ourselves, to let the mourning period pass, to be sad, yes, to never forget the past, absolutely, because we can't. We need to be people of the book, of history, to understand the context of a future, but a future we will have as the Jewish people. B'mehera b'yameinu, in our days speedily, Tisha B'Av, this last night, day of Av, should be the last day of sorrow. And as our rabbis tell us, it should become a festival, a day of Yom Tov, equal to Yom HaKippurim and Tu B'Av. I wish everyone well.